suggestion of evil. Is there such a thing as evil? Is evil real? Do real evil things happen? Intuitively, it seems that there are good reasons on both sides of the question. On the one hand, you look at the world, it's hard to take the question seriously. Do really evil things happen? My gosh. Terrible, horrible things happen. If they aren't evil, what is? Surely evil things happen. On the other hand, God is good, and God is all-powerful, God is running the show, how can there be? So the thought is, maybe evil is an illusion somehow. These things look evil, but if we would look more deeply into them, maybe we'd see that it's a mistake. This is where the questioning starts. This is how the question gets set up. Now, if you look at the Jewish sources, it can seem that the Jewish sources are just as confusing as your initial intuition, because it can seem that there are Jewish sources on both sides of the question. For example, there is a verse in Isaiah, where it describes God as Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, Ose Shalom Uvorei Ra. If you say in the Siddur of the morning, the Siddur just changes the last word. It describes God as creating evil. That's what it says in Isaiah. The Siddur changes it, creates everything. First the reason, but I'm not going to go through now. So Isaiah says God creates evil. In Lamentations, written by Jeremiah, there is a verse. Mipi Elyon, from state say Haroz Vatov. Now, you read that verse literally, it says, from the mouth of the Most High will not come out evil and good. Rashi reads it as a negative interrogative. From the mouth of the Most High, will there not come out evils and good? Meaning, there definitely will come out evils and good. Isn't it so that from the mouth of the Most High will come out evils and good? Then you have a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, just as a person must make a blessing on the good things that happen to him, so must he make a blessing on the evil things that happen to him. And they're different blessings. Which means not only do some good and some evil things happen, but a human being is capable to tell the difference. Our perception is accurate enough, our understanding is accurate enough to tell the difference between what is good and what is evil. These sources, taken at face value, say that there is real evil. Evil is real. On the other hand, you do have the fact that God is good, which has to be reconciled somehow. And there are two famous statements in the Talmud. There was a fellow, one of the Tanoim named Nachum, great scholar, great study. He came home from a trip one day, and he had donkeys laden with his materials. Poor man came up to him and said, Rebbe Parnaseni, give me some money. And Nachum said, fine, I'll be glad to help you. Let me just unload my donkeys. They're standing here holding their load. They've come in for a long trip. I'll unload the donkeys and then I'll give you something to eat. And as he was unloading the donkeys, the poor man died. Well, Nachum took upon himself the responsibility for the death, and he cursed himself. These eyes that didn't help your eyes to see your face, you go blind, and these hands that didn't help you should be chopped off. And he cursed himself with all sorts of terrible, terrible suffering. And every one of his curses came true. And as each curse came true, he said the famous words, "Gamzu l'tov." Oh my.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
that's pretty good. Gamzu l'tov. This too is for good. Now, it sounds like what Nachum is saying is terrible suffering, terrible pain, terrible loss, but don't think it's bad, it's really good. Rabbi Akiva was Nochum's disciple. And Talmud says that once Rabbi Akiva was traveling, he came to a town and no one there gave him hospitality. So he went off into the forest and spent the night in the forest. And in the middle of the night, the bird that he had with him that was supposed to wake him up in the morning died. And the candle that he was using for light went out, was blown out by the wind. And the donkey that he was using to transport his goods chewed through its tether and wandered off. And on each thing that happened, he said, "Everything God does is for good." In the morning, he went back to the city, and he discovered that during the nighttime, robbers had been there and had taken all the goods of the city. I don't remember whether they killed the people in the city or didn't kill the people. They did kill the people in the city. They killed the city. So he said, "You see, everything God does is for good." Had the bird been there alive, it would have made noise, and the donkey would have made noise, and the candle would have shown light, and they would have found me. They would have done the same thing to me that he did. So there we go. So Rabbi Akiva is echoing the words of his Rebbe, "Everything God does is for good." So it seems like with the same contradiction within Jewish sources that we have intuitively, is evil real or isn't it? Now, I will explain to you the position of Ramchal, Pizzato, and I will tell you that I have not found anyone who explicitly disagrees. There are sources that say certain things that people want to interpret one way or another, but I think this is it's either the majority position or it's the only position. Ramchal takes the position that evil is real. It is real. Not an illusion. It's not a mistake. Still, God, of course, is good and only good. So you have to figure out how evil can come out of good, how a good, all good, perfectly good God could create evil and allow us to do evil, give us the capacity to do evil, and what to do with Nachum's statement and Rabbi Akiva's statement. So it's a reconcile. And the solution is that sometimes evil is a necessary means to good. There are certain goods that cannot be accomplished without evil. So that a holy good God, a perfectly good God, will cause evil, because otherwise it's impossible to get to the good. Here's an analogy, just to appreciate the idea. Imagine a pediatrician who immunizes his patients, his children, by giving them injections. I don't know if they still do that. My time, I get 2 dozen injections since you were a child over the years before immunization. I have some of them done by pill. But imagine the days which were done by injection. Now let's see. The doctor is immunizing the child against disease. That's good. The doctor is sticking the child with a needle and causing it pain. That's bad. Don't make a mistake. Sticking with the needle is bad. Proof. Next year, when they invent immunization with a pill, you don't expect the doctor to continue to use the needle. Why? Because needing to use the needle is bad. But what? As a package deal, it's worth it. Now, shall we say that when the doctor uses the needle in the years where there's only needles, shall we say, okay, so the doctor has done an action, part of which is good and part of which is bad. So that being the case, it must be that the doctor is partly good and partly bad. His will, his attitudes, his goals, his values must be partly good and partly bad. Because he did something that's partly good and partly bad. Well, even though it's Thursday afternoon, I hope you can see that that's stuff, right? The doctor could be perfectly benevolent, perfectly good and caring, kind, sympathetic. It's just that he can't get the good without the bad. At that time, there's no way to immunize the child without causing him the pain. So that being the case, a wholly good agent can perform actions which are bad when the evil and the action is a necessary means to a good that needs to be accomplished. And that's going to be the name of the solution. I hope you're going to ask the relevant question here. Yeah, no, no, you ask first. Go ahead.
I have trouble accepting that evil is necessary for good.
Why?
Because if we have a God that can do anything, nothing's impossible, and if he's all good, why would he create evil?
Terrific. That's exactly the right question at this point. I said over and over again, necessary. I'm going to jog. Somebody's great. Right? What do you mean, necessary? The evil is necessary? Okay, for doctors, we can understand that. Medical science has its weaknesses and its state of development. But we're now applying this idea to God. We're saying that God creates evil because this is a necessary means to the good. If God is all-powerful, how could that means be necessary? Why can't he just create the good without the means? Now, the answer is in what what I've told some of you. God can do anything. You specify a thing, God can do it. If you specify the thing to be done, God can do it. Okay. Can God blah? What? What are you asking? I said, can God blah? What do you mean by blah? Nothing really. But can he do it? That's not a question. I haven't specified anything to be done. I just used the nonsense syllable. Now, if somebody says something as dumb as that, the correct response is not to say he can do it. And the correct response is not to say he can't do it. The correct response is to say you haven't asked the question. If you want to ask whether God can do something, you've got to specify a thing to be done.
The answer's blah.
Yeah, the answer's blah, right. Can God and? Oh, can he what? You heard me. And. Can he that? Can he and? That's not a question. Now, failures to specify come in different types. The bottom line is, you have to make sense. And if you say, can God blank, and you fill in the blank with words that don't make sense, then you haven't specified something to be done, which means you haven't asked a coherent question. Let's see some of the ways in which a person can fail. Well, here's an example from Noam Chomsky in another context. Can God make colorless green ideas sleep furiously? That was Chomsky's example of a totally meaningless sentence. Even though the grammar's okay. Colorless green ideas sleep furiously. Now, given the way those concepts are used, given what those concepts mean, that string of words has no meaning. It doesn't say anything. Can God make a square circle? Well, Maimonides and the Malbim both say, we don't assert that God can make square circles. Because when I say square circle, I'm contradicting myself. If I contradict myself, I'm not succeeded in specifying something to be done. So the question of whether he can do it doesn't arise. Don't make a mistake. If you contradict yourself, it's not that you're specifying something very, 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 very hard to do, but that God, who's all-powerful, can do even very, 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 very hard things. That's not the right way to look at it. When you contradict yourself, you're not specifying something very hard. You're not specifying, period. Because you're failing to make sense. This is the answer to the famous chestnut, can God make a stone too heavy for him to lift? The answer is, stone too heavy for God to lift is a contradiction. So I won't say that he can make it, and I won't say that he can't make it. I will simply point out that no question has been asked, because nothing to be done has been specified. This, by the way, also applies to a discussion that many people have. I'm happy to get down with someone who's really very well learned it, but I think this is a standard mistake. Could God make what we call evil good and what we call good evil? Could just change around the concept, so to speak? Well, that means something like this. Could God make torturing small children for fun good? I think that's just as open a contradiction as square circles. If you think that God can't, if you don't want to say that God can make color the screen ideas sleep furiously, because the concepts don't fit together, in exactly the same breath, I want to hold that we shouldn't say God can make square circles, we shouldn't say that God can make torturing small children for fun good. Because that is a paradigm application of the word evil. You put good there, you're left without any sense. You don't have an idea what it means. Just not making sense. Now, the answer to your question is this. To ask whether God could have done it otherwise means we owe a consistent description of the otherwise. If in the description of the otherwise we end up contradicting ourselves, then there isn't an otherwise there to ask about. And the proposition will be this, that imagining God creating this good without this means is a contradiction. This good is, as we've said, giving as much of himself that a creature can have. And the means is that there will be evil. And if you analyze in detail what the good is, namely giving as much of himself as possible, and analyze what the evil is, you'll see that to try to describe achieving that good without this means is a contradiction. And that's why we don't worry about why he didn't do it that way, because there is no that way. Now, when we talk about what evil is and how it functions, I'll come back and get to Hashem, I'll show you how the deduction goes. But that's the answer to the question. It's the right question to ask. That's the way the question should be answered, as far as I'm concerned.
You said that, you know, a doctor can do something bad or something good. So what about, like, you know, the doctors of the Holocaust that were testing on the Jews, you know, to benefit mankind? That's doing something bad to the benefit of something good. So you can use the same logic.
There's a stock market, right? Some stocks are worth investigating. Right? And some stocks pay a profit. Some stocks pay a regular profit. Does that mean that every investment is right? Just because some are right? If I agree that some stocks are worth investing in, does that mean that every time somebody wants to borrow money for his business, I have to give it to him? Because I said some stocks are okay? I don't think so. The fact that some are good doesn't mean that all are good. There are some cases in which you tolerate evil in order to achieve good. Because the balance between the two is a worthwhile balance. It doesn't follow that you always tolerate every evil for every good. You buy a book. The book costs $20 for a 400-page classic. I have a 50-page book that's just mediocre. I'm charging $300. Are you willing to buy it? No, that's not a good price. Not every sale is worthwhile. Some sales are good, some sales are not good. So here, the fact that in this case, this evil is a worthwhile, necessary means to that good, doesn't mean that in every case, every evil is worthwhile for every good. Some will be good, some will be correct, and some will be correct.
Yeah. We have a more deeper definition of good and evil other than what Hashem says.
Yes, in fact, that can't be the definition. Maybe we'll get to that next week. This is a very tricky, tricky, controversial subject. I will just tell you the truth, since you raised the question, I'm not going to argue it today. This is a separate issue. Many people will tell you that good means what God commands, and evil means what He forbids. That's what they'll tell you. That position has many virtues. It's clear, it's precise, it's simple, and it's great for beating up the atheist. Because if good means what God says, and evil means what He forbids, so then the atheist hasn't got any good or evil. And then you say, oh, what are you going to say about the Nazis, huh? If you're an atheist, you can't condemn the Nazis. That's not a good position to be in, especially in public. So, that position has great virtues. It only has one drawback. It's wrong. The truth is complex, subtle, messy, difficult. And it's useless to beat up the atheist. Its only virtue is that it's true. So I'm telling you that this or not. I'm telling you this and I'm stressing it because in many books, including books on Kiruv, you'll find this position used. That good means what God said and bad means what God forbids. The only thing you'll find in all these books is zero footnotes. This position is never footnoted to any of the classical literature. There's a reason for that. Because it isn't in the classical literature. And indeed, the classical literature is filled with the opposite. That there is good and evil independent of God's command. And had God never commanded anything, certain things would really be good and really be evil. The most famous classical commentators, starting with the Talmud, going down to the 20th century, agree on this. So the truth is much more complicated than it seems on the surface. But I'm not going to do that today.
Also, when you said that some sales aren't worth the price, that's the perspective of the Nazi doctor, or rather the perspective of the victim. So that evil is being for that person. We're supposed to understand,
oh, I didn't get to that. Let's see. Step by step. All I did now is reconcile the existence of evil with the fact that God is good. Amchal is a step further than this. Amchal has a proof of this. Oh, a proof. A very, very strong argument. He says, I'm going to give you a way to test which position is correct. That evil is an illusion. It's a mistake. Really, if you penetrate deeply enough, you'll see that it's good. Versus no. Evil is real. But it's justified because it leads to other things that are good. And here's how you test it. Let's take something that looks evil and see which way it goes. Let's take toothache. Now this is my example, but this is his idea. Let's take toothache. Toothache is a severe pain. Pain, something which we normally think of as evil. Okay, now to reconcile the toothache with God's good. Shall we say that the toothache itself is good? It just looks evil. It's just an illusion. Penetrate more deeply into the toothache and you'll see that it's good. Or shall we say that the toothache is evil, really evil, but it's justified because it brings to good? How shall I test between the two of them? So says Ramchal, imagine a universe whose only occupant is toothache. Toothache and only toothache forever. Just toothache. Not toothache in prayer, not toothache in tshuva, not toothache in charity, not toothache in sensitivity for others, not toothache in reward in the world to come. Toothache forever! Now, does it look likely that you're going to be able to explain why really that's good? That you can reconcile that with a good creator, an all good creator? Doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it. When we justify two things, what we do is we say, 2 things bring to a person to do tshuva, 2 things bring him to pray, 2 things bring him to be more sensitive to other people, 2 things, 2 things bring him to be charitable. In other words, 2 things bring. They bring other things. Good. Then you're treating the 2 things as a means to something else. That's good. That's the second position. That's not the first position. Rav Huss says this is a way to test your intuition, test your logic, to see what it would mean to take the first position that it's all an illusion. You'd have to somehow show that a universe of only 2 things forever could be created by an all-good God. That's going to be a very daunting test. Now, is that a proof that it couldn't be done? Not really, but it shows that we have the clue as to how it could be done. Certainly nothing in our literature that indicates that it could be done. And that makes it, you know, a gigantic uphill battle if anybody wanted to take that position. Yeah.
What about the concept of kapara, where the pain itself is intrinsically the thing which destroys the punishment you would get?
Yes, but then it's removing a punishment from the future, right? That's future consequence. It's changing the future. That's why it's good, yeah.
Why can't a means be good by itself? I mean, a means that has to get to an end, but once you have the end, it's also there. If you're just looking at the means, it's also good.
Let's treat this a little bit like a piece of Gemara. What difference does it make whether you call something means or ends? I'm really contradicting another principle of mine now, but let's do it this way. You're right. So the difference in our terms is this: to call something an end means.
I'm trying to avoid that.
Implies. No. When I call something an end, this is what it is intended. It's intended that there's nothing you have to do more to justify it. Calling it an end is a way of saying it's justified by itself. You don't ask, but why is that important? Why is that valuable? Why are you doing that? It's an end. It's for itself, not for something else. Calling something a means is to say that it isn't justified by itself. It's only justified because it leads to something else. Which implies that if you could get to the something else without this, that was his question before, right? If you could get to the something else without this, then there would be no reason to have it. And you should eliminate it. Now, that's certainly not true with pain. Even if pain brings you later to a great good, it doesn't follow that the pain was itself an end. To say that the pain is an end would mean to say that even if the pain didn't bring to this end, it would have been worthwhile. That's not true. The only way that I reconcile myself to pain is to say that it brings to this end.
I didn't say it was an end, though. I'm saying that why can't you call it good? Because it brings to the end. The thing itself is good.
If a thing is good, then it is an end. It's an end by itself. If someone asks you, why are you doing this? The answer is because it's good. You don't need anything more than that.
Connect it up, it's good.
No, it isn't good. It's a means to something good.
It's only once you disconnect it.
It's not a means to something good if it's disconnected.
Right.
When you say that it...
But I'm saying when it is a means, then it's connected.
Yes.
When it's connected, it's good.
Do you mean good in and of itself, or just a good means to an end?
A good means to an end.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that's good in and of itself. That's just a created term for the concept of being a means to an end. We're talking about whether or not it's good in and of itself. What does the first position hold? That when you say it's evil, it's an illusion. It's an illusion. You made a mistake. If you find that it's a means to a good end, you didn't make a mistake. You understood it correctly. You just didn't understand its implications. But you understood it correctly. It is evil. Now, the difference will be, what do I have to do to justify it? If I'm worried about X, why is there X? What justifies X? And I have to say, oh, you know what justifies X? Because it brings to Y that I'm not treating X as an end, and I'm not treating X as good in and of itself. Because if it were good in and of itself, I wouldn't need to justify by connecting it to something else. Something that's good in and of itself is fine to have all for itself without any connection. That's what it means to say that it's good in and of itself. Yeah.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying, that pain can lead to good. So is that a reason for someone that's trying to achieve a high level to put himself in pain, talk about pain, or put, you know, avoid to fix the pain so that he can, you know, achieve the good, better good?
So the answer will be only if that's the only way for him to achieve the good. And even then, only if God, who is the reason why he's trying to achieve the good, says that you should either tolerate or seek this pain for the sake of that good. He knows the measures of what's worth it. When the pain is worth the good that you're trying to achieve and when it isn't. And when he says that, yes, you should tolerate this pain in order to achieve that good, yes, then it's worthwhile to do. You have to be careful. If you do it on your own, you're likely to make a bad purchase. You're likely to be paying $400 for a 100-page video.
Like I think about Israel compared to America. I think America, you know, financially, no problem. Israel, you know, could be tough for us. But I think it could bring together a tighter family, more, you know, positive growth. And
so this calculation could be weighed both ways.
Right.
For some people, it's right to put up with the enormous suffering of living in the land. The tensions and minor irritations of living in the land of Israel for the great impact it has on your spirituality. And for other people, it's not the right calculation. I know people who can't live here. They just can't take it. Their whole personalities go to pieces. You know, they become nervous wrecks. They just can't handle it. They've been here. They've tried it. They can't handle it. So then it's not worth it. It all depends upon the price. Okay, but now we're really not making the price. So that's the solution from the point of view of the second position, that evil Israel. What to do about Nochal and Rabbi Akiva? Now, boys and girls, I will teach you how to read a piece of Gemara. Nochal Ish Gamzu said three words. Gamzu Letova. From the point of view of the first position, that evil is an illusion, he said a little too much. He said, this too is for good. Now, if you thought that evil was an illusion, there's one extra word there. Which word?
For.
Why did he say this too is for good? What he ought to have said is this too is good. If you think evil is an illusion, you think it's a mistake, then what you say is, I know this looks evil to you, but you're making a mistake. It is good. It is good. He didn't say that. He put in Hebrew one letter. One extra letter. Let Tova. When you read Chazal, every letter has to be canceled. And here it's worse because putting that letter in makes a bad description for the first position. And Rabbi Akiva preserved his Rebbe's Lamed. Komado Avi Rachmana, Litav. Everything that God does is for good. For good implies that it's not good now. It's justified because it will bring to good later. So that is Rachal's position.
We have a real Chumash here with Rashi.
Now, in the end of the Chumash, someone quoted this to me to prove to me that I was wrong. In Hazinu, this is good for the tape. Otherwise, the person listening to the tape will say, oh, I know it's wrong, because it says in Hazinu. Chapter 32, verse 4, in the book of Deuteronomy, Hatzur told me, Paolo, the rock whose work is perfect, because all his ways are justice. Kel Amun Avein Oval, faithful God and no crookedness. Tzadik V'yashar Hu, righteous and straight is he. Now, the words do sound like everything's done exactly right. Everything works out exactly right. Now listen to Rashi. Kel Amun, a faithful God. Shalem letzadikim sitkosom, to pay to the righteous their righteousness. La'olam habo, in the world to come. Yes, the righteous will be paid down to the last penny for everything that they've done in their righteousness in the world to come. But it means in this world, the righteous can suffer. The righteous can suffer in this world, only in the world to come. Even though God delays their reward, in the end, he will verify. by his words. Now, several of the Rishonim, the question is asked, why? Well, okay, that's what I believe. At any rate, you see, huh?
What's the source?
Rashi.
Is this Rashi? 32.4.
So the verse that sounds like nothing ever goes wrong, Rashi tells you, it'll all be paid in the end. But in the meantime, the person can be righteous, and so that means he's getting something that is not commensurate with what he deserves, with what he earned. Yes, that can happen. Or I should actually say what I'm saying, not the opposite. Yes.
If the righteous doesn't suffer, does it take away from his Olam Haba?
Okay. I mean, the Gemara says that the person, any person, goes 30 days without suffering, that he should worry that he's losing his world to come. That he's being paid in this world. Then the Gemara says, and what do we mean when we talk about suffering? Included in suffering is putting your hand in your pocket to take out a nickel and taking out a quarter, or vice versa. Pulling out the wrong coin. If that happens to you once in 30 days, you're suffering. Don't worry. So the Gemara has a very, very liberal idea of what counts as suffering. Yeah, but okay, whatever. Yeah.
So evil is real.
Yes.
And evil would be the opposite of good thing. Right?
Yes.
So in an infinitely perfect being, how can evil be fulfilled?
Well, the concept of God as a being is the concept of action and will. We said at the beginning that that's all we have of God. We don't know what God's essence is. We don't talk about that at all. It's beyond all conceiving. All we talk about is God as agency, action and will. And now we're back to the doctor. What the doctor proves is that an all good agent can do things that are bad when they are a necessary means to a good without compromising his goodness. The doctor who hurts the child doesn't become less good as an agent because he's hurting the child.
What if he enjoys it?
Oh, so that'll be a problem. I was going to say, I left this out, but you know, sometimes I say when I describe the wrong picture, you know, that he's partly bad and partly good, he's partly sadist, you know. Oh boy, I'll watch that squirm, you know, watch him scream. That's really, you know, okay, I'm in charge. I mean, I wouldn't do it just for nothing, but. You gotta get a chance to give him a real shot, you know. Thick needle. Ah, boy, that's really. But of course, our sources say that God cries when we're in pain, and that He shares our pain with us, and so on and so on. Wait, that's not our picture of God. Okay, now. What is evil? Here you have a very interesting problem. Santa really talks about this, though not exactly these terms. In Hebrew and in English, the word evil, word ra, is used to cover two kinds of things, two different categories of things, and it's not at all obvious why they should go together. Ra, evil, sometimes is used for suffering, pain, destruction, tragedy. And sometimes evil is used for crime, criminal actions. Now, neither one implies the other. If somebody steals $10 from George W. Bush, he won't even notice it. He's a multimillionaire. When I was teaching at the Bayerish Lion, there was a girl there whose father was a gynecologist in Los Angeles. And at one point he discovered that two people in his office, two of his employees in his office, had been stealing $75,000 a year from him for the last 3 years. He just didn't notice it. He didn't notice missing $75,000 a year, you know? So you can imagine what kind of money he was making, right? You know? At any rate, so here you have crime without suffering. And on the other hand, at least the way we normally look at the world, you can have suffering without crime. A person can suffer through natural causes One can bring suffering on himself without anybody committing any crimes. Why would the same concepts be used to apply to these two very different categories? Now, you could get at it. You could say, evil just means things aren't the best. And it's true, there are lots of different ways in which things could not be the best. People aren't paying, it's not the best. People committing crimes, not the best. And you can just lump it together, even though they're really different categories, but they share this very, very thin quality of being, you know, less than the best. Ramchal has a different definition of evil, and it applies to two categories directly. Evil is being out of touch with God. God's being disconnected from us, and we being disconnected from God. What's called in the Hebrew language, hesterfon, God hiding his face. All good is expressed in being connected to God. All evil is expressed in being disconnected from God. Now I'll show you how those two categories share this characteristic of being disconnected from God. Pain, suffering, I've mentioned this to you. We'll do a 30-second review. All we have of God, as we said, is will. The essence of will is the purpose. The purpose of everything is loving kindness. When people suffer, you don't see God's loving kindness. You don't see the purpose. He's hiding the purpose. You may know it. You know lots of things that you don't see. You know the table's made of molecules. You don't see the molecules. That it's made of molecules is hidden from your eyes. Your eyes don't see that. Your eyes don't reveal that. Even high-powered science don't feel like it. So here too, if people are in pain, God is hidden, it's very difficult to feel God's presence when people are in pain. It's very difficult to connect to God when people are in pain. Can it be done? Okay, that's part of a spiritual exercise. But it's hard because he's hidden himself. As far as crime is concerned, let's think of what happens when a person does a mitzvah. When a person does a mitzvah, you see in his action God's will. This person is performing Kiddush Friday night. No. So, there's a verse in the Torah, and there's a passage in the Talmud, and there's a clause in the Shulchan Aruch, and he has become an embodiment of the verse and the Talmud and the Shulchan Aruch, which means he's become an embodiment for God's will. By his free decision, he's expressing God's will. You see God's will in him through his free expression. Indeed, if you know a little more philosophy, you know that God wants you to do it freely, so you see it even more exquisitely. By doing this, he's fulfilling the purpose of creation right before your very eyes. If a person does a crime, you see the opposite. You see, when a person performs a crime, you see a person disconnected from God's will. On the contrary, his decision leads to something which is against God's will. So if I picture God creating and sustaining the universe, and then I picture this particular item, George eating the cheeseburger, George Schwartz, so he's disconnected. He doesn't express God's will. He expresses the opposite. Both crime and suffering hide God's presence and make it more difficult to connect to God through those items in the world. That's what makes it evil. And that's why the word evil embraces both of them. Because from the point of view of Ramchal, we have, a natural, deep solution to why the word evil is used to cover those two different categories.
Are there degrees of evil, or one
certain thing that you can't? There are degrees of evil. There are definitely degrees of evil. Yeah. We'll talk about it next time. Okay.